Hi, welcome to Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Guys, I just want to remind you about our Arizona deer raffle. We still have some tickets available. So if you go to johnstallone.me and click on the raffles, and you'll see there's a deer raffle and a coyote raffle. Coyote raffle is done for this year right now, still doing the deer. It's a 1 in 100 chance of winning. And it's $40 a ticket. So, pretty cool investment there and a chance to go hunting with me and the guys, with Days in the Wild. So, today we're talking elk. Today we got, episode number two of, the Elk Nut series that we're doing. And I have Paul Mattel with us on the line. And, before we get into the questions I got, I just want you guys to go and take a look at Paul's app. You guys, I got a bunch of questions from you. Some of them I'm not going to address, but I put down quite a few of them because they were different. But Paul's app is going to help you learn those communications that you heard us talk about, that you heard him talking about. And it's a game changer. I mean, you watch him do it, you listen to the real elk doing it, you listen to him do it, tells you why, and it gives it a name, which helps you, you know, separate it, and that's how you learn how to communicate. So check that out. Anyway, so Paul, what's up, man?
Hey, not much. Hey, thanks a lot, John, for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you are often one of my most popular guests, if not the most popular guests. You're definitely in the top five.
Well, I better, you know, buck up a little bit and try to get there to the top. Like elk hunting, you know, I mean, when I think of elk hunting, I mean, it's like, you just have to be on top of your game. I feel like every time I go out there, I want to be the best that anybody can be, that I don't leave anything on the table, that when I'm going into an encounter or I'm trying to locate elk, I'm doing it the absolute best way possible. And that's the truth. I mean, that's how I view it. I don't just go out there and go through the motions and hope something good happens. I try to make it happen.
And that's the way you got to be. I think you got to be that way with everything. And I admire that about you. I mean, you could go out there and half-ass it and get lucky sometimes, but I feel if you want to be consistently good, really at anything, but especially at hunting, there's a lot that goes into it. You have to put a lot into it.
So. Yeah, it's true, especially the animal that you're focusing on. I mean, you have to understand, you know, we talk a lot about the language and this and that all the time, but you have to understand, you know, their mannerisms, their behavior. You know, the things that make them tick under certain situations, that is what you start analyzing. And that's what I try to help people appreciate when I say, read the situation, evaluate the situation. Those aren't just words. Those are the things I cling to because, you know, most of the elk that we're hunting, we don't see them. And so everything is by sound only. So we're trying to evaluate, identify, create a strategic plan that's going to fit that elk. And that's what I mean when I say read it and then read and react. That's what you're really doing out there.
Right. And that's actually kind of what we started to talk about in the last podcast episode. And that was going to be my question to you, actually.
Oh, okay.
obviously a lot of this comes from your experience, and experience is king out there when learning how to read things. But are there some ways that you can fast track, a few years out in the field and learning how to read what's going on?
Yeah, there certainly is. And I think one of the best pieces of homework that somebody could do is to really consider checking out a lot of the YouTube videos out there. And I mean like elk hunts, not the guys that are out there, you know, everybody already does the very popular ones. But just go look at elk hunts because a lot of those are kind of cool because they're only 5 or 10 minutes, and so you're not looking at something 45 minutes all the time. You know, it's something real short. But watch how the elk are reacting to specific sounds from the caller, and see how he responds back. And in time, by doing this, you start building up an appreciation that you can see when something's going to mess up or when something's going to come out okay. I mean, you really do. It's homework. And all you're doing is listening to the elk. You're watching. You're listening to them. You're seeing their change of emotion in a bugle or a cow call. And you're starting to appreciate and realize that they're not all meaning the same thing. They change the tone. And that's what I mean. Once you start understanding that, you and then you're out in the woods and you hear it, I mean, my goodness, it almost gives you something to, you know, sink your teeth into, understand and listen to their communication so you know what to do back. And that's what I'm doing. I'm not doing anything, you know, different than that. But the app, not trying to plug it or anything, but the app has so much information that almost any question somebody has, the answer is in there. You know, maybe not under that little title, but start reading a lot of the tips that are there under every sound, and you will be shocked how much information is in there that can help cut that learning curve way, way back.
For sure. Yeah, that's what I was saying in the beginning. I mean, you're basically doing yourself a disservice if you don't have that, you know, have that app and you're trying to learn you know, elk vocalizations. It's like absolutely key, in my opinion.
Right. You know, even if for techniques, and if you look at the ElkNet nuggets, there's 10 steps in there of different things that we will go over depending on a situation. Sometimes you get thrown a curve, and you have to know how to adjust your thinking and apply it to that encounter you're in. It's so simple to say, I'm just going to do this, this, and this for every elk, and hopefully it works out. Well, you know, it's not going to. So right. You're constantly trying to tailor what you're calling or the sounds you're going to use by what you're hearing, and that's where the adjustment, and you have to be willing to make that adjustment because the situation isn't maybe what you thought at first. So you need to be able to adapt and adjust to those things. And that's elk hunting. And when you start doing that, you're going to have a lot of close encounters. And I mean a whole lot of them. And that's what people really hope for as hunters. When hunters are out there, they're thinking, I just need an opportunity. If I have an opportunity where I'm drawing my bow and I mess up, you know, that's on me. But at least I had enough information and knowledge and understanding their behavior of what to expect, and I had an opportunity. And some will cash in on it, some won't. That, you know, the excitement may get the best of them, especially if you're a newer hunter.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all about opportunities, in my opinion. I mean,
that's true. I mean, nobody argue with that.
You know, it's I'm an experienced hunter. Don't get me wrong, I'd be lying to you if I told
you. Sure you are. I know you are, yeah. I
wouldn't want to get antlers on the ground, but you got to love it for all of it. You know, you're not going to go home with something every time, so you got to be about the experience. And I think this is elk is one of those things where, because you're dealing with you know, communication, and because you're dealing with vocalizations and learning social behavior and all that stuff, it's like every time you go out there, it doesn't matter how experienced you are, how many days you spend elk hunting, you always learn something.
Oh yeah.
It's deer hunting's like that, but it's not like that. You know, it's not the same.
No.
Elk hunting is a whole, I mean, some people could equate, I guess, turkey hunting, because you're doing calling and you're doing things similar to that. So I could see it. I just don't get that excited about turkeys. As I'm sure you don't.
Well, it's April, May, you know, so things are, you know, they're a little slow at that time. And so a lot of folks kind of get into that to try to jumpstart their hunting season and move forward. And you know, so that's cool. I used to turkey hunt a lot, but I haven't for years now, just because I lost that excitement for it that I once had. I actually felt it was just too easy. And so I kind of just kind of drifted away from it.
Gotcha. Well, let's get into some of these questions that I got sent over to me today.
Yeah, sure.
So I made a post on Facebook, as you know, and I got sent over like 10, 15 questions. So I'm going to go. The first one is, what do you do? And I wanted to answer this guy back when he sent it to me, but what did you do? What do you do when you lose cover if you're like 100 yards from a bull and the cows are bedded basically between you and the bull at like 60 yards? If you call, the cows are going to spot you. So what do I do in this situation?
Yeah, if you're going to call, anything's going to spot you. You know, even the bull. I mean, if we're only talking 100 yards. So, I mean, and what's the wind doing and what time of day is it? I mean, is it swirling and you're going to get busted any second, or is it holding up and you have a chance just to sit there and wait it out? The cows obviously don't know you're there, or they'd have been gone. So, you know, it's a tough situation because it sounds like it's a pretty clear opening. They're not bedded in the timber, or you probably wouldn't be able to see them at 60 yards, and you definitely wouldn't see the bull at 100. So being able to spot that entire situation in front of you, that's a tough thing. It really is. There's no magic wand out there. What would I do? Man, first of all, why did I get 60 yards from the cows? I must have had a plan. There must have been something there in the undulation of the ground that I thought I could creep in and get closer. I wouldn't go into a situation like that saying, well, I'm going to go at them. I can get 60 yards and that's it. Nothing else. Unless some guy's some fantastic shot and he knows sooner or later that bull's going to come and tend to the cows. And he will, if the wind holds up long enough. And he could come and tend to them, circle them, walk through them. And if you feel you can make a 60-yard shot, more power to you. You know, but I would not make a sound. And if I did make a sound, it would only be a sound to stop the bull with like a nervous grunt because he finally walked over to the cows, and I may do something of that nature. Now, I was in a similar situation, but the distance wasn't as great. And what happened to me, and I was hunting timber, and I came across this meadow, and I was hunting with a longbow. And when I came to the opening of the meadow, and the meadow was probably 125 yards across, and this was just after daylight, I just was coming out of the timber. I'd walked into this little edge of a meadow, and I was going to walk across and go to the other side. And I got probably 15 yards into the meadow, and my son was with me, and he saw something move, and he goes, "Elk." And so we both just went down real quick on one knee. And I mean, we're in 18-inch grass, if anything, and it's an opening 125 yards across, and there's nothing in this thing. It's even wider than that, and there's not even a rock. And we're sitting there kneeling, doing nothing, and here comes those elk that he spotted before I did, and they just started walking toward us. They weren't even in the meadow. They were still in the timber, just kind of, you could see the movement. And as they came out, they walked into the meadow. So just kind of give an idea of what I did in this situation, because distance to me in this case and that case is kind of irrelevant. Here's what happened. And as these elk came out, there was actually 9 of them. There was a couple of calves in it and a bunch of cows, and they started making their way into the meadow. And the first thing they did as they walked in that meadow, they spotted me and my son. But I've been in that situation before. And I knew if I don't move, they'll lose interest in me. They've probably been in that meadow 100 times and never noticed those two stumps sitting over there before, you know. And I'll tell you, elk are not like deer. They do not recognize the human figure. They just don't do it. John, I've killed at least 6 or 7 bulls that were, I was in an opening like that. And I waited them out. I didn't make a move. And they just forget about you. They really do, and then you wait for your moment. In this case, those cows came through, and they were within 10 yards of me. And the wind was hitting me in the face. And they were milling around. 2 calves are jumping all over like they were, you know, in a nursery school. They were just bouncing all over. And all of a sudden, here come the bull. And he come walking out, walked to the edge, walked to the cows. And all this is probably a good 10 or 15 minutes, and the wind held up. Finally, that bull came. He turned. He was standing broadside, and the bull bugled behind him way off in the distance, and he turned his head to look, and I thought, it's now or never. Those cows are right there, probably 10 yards or less. And I thought, the minute I start to draw, I had that longbow up, arrow knocked. The minute I draw, they're probably going to blow out of there. And when I drew, I focused on him. I did not pay attention to those cows. And when I drew, I knocked and let it go, and I actually put that arrow right through that bull's heart. And those cows never budged, never moved an inch. That bull ran completely out of the open into the timber, and then the cows took off. You would have thought it would have been like a volcano blowing up everywhere, but they didn't move. And so, you know, and this was with elk at 10 yards. And I'm just showing you, I waited the situation out is what I was able to do at that distance. And yet the bull actually ran right into the timber and he was dead. And I tracked him right down in no time whatsoever. 30 minutes I waited a little bit because I never saw him come out. But anyway, in that situation where someone's 60 yards, what do? You know, I mean, you hope for the best. You can't make a sound because they're going to bust you. They're going to look right at you. Now, if at any time at that 60 yards, that bull leaves my view, he's able to get somewhere and drop out of sight, I'd run right at those cows. That's what I would do. I've done it before and killed the herd bull. I ran right at him. And one of the things I've noticed when I've run at cows like that, when the opportunity is there, it's not something that happens all the time, is I notice they never bark. They just run. And I mean, you can't stand up and walk at him and cow call. I don't do that. I run right at him. And it just scatters them, and they just run like crazy in all kinds of directions. And as soon as I get close to them, I rip the bugle off, just screaming. And when I'm actually trying to use a Roundup, and I'm trying to call them back to me, I'll hit it twice before a bull can even respond, just super fast, you know, letting them know why they ran. And I've had that bull just come flying in and kill him. So, you know, sometimes it's those little things that you look for. Sometimes you have to wait them out. Other times you just have to back out because maybe the wind's getting iffy and there's nothing good going to come of it. So, you know, you have to weigh those situations as they develop. You just don't know. There's just not a one answer unless you have a rifle, you know. But with a bow, you're at the mercy of what may develop and what may not.
Right. Well, this guy was he's an Arizona hunter, so I'm assuming he's talking about. So, like, depending on where you're hunting here, some of our Ponderosa areas, there's a crap ton of trees, mm-hmm. so there's a canopy, but it's very wide open. You could see for 200 yards, even though there's a crap ton of trees. So I'm assuming that's what he's talking about. And I've been in that situation several times because that's pretty common here because of that. You know, you're using a rise or whatever, and then you think the bull or, you know, the bull elk is only like, let's say, 40 or 50 yards over that rise because that, you know, you're judging sound. And then you get there, you're mm-hmm. like, oh, shit, their cows are right here. Matter of fact, I think I've been in that
exact situation. I think we all have. But I just,
the cows are right there, and he's back there. And, I mean, I mentioned the rise. If you had a rise, I'd back up and, you know, try to get him to come up to, you know, call over the rise because he can't see if you call if you back down. But, you know, I guess it does.
It's like, if, you know, we have the Elk Nuts playbook. If you look at that photo on it, that's a 6x7 bull, a super nice bull. And the young man that shot it was named Clayton, and he shot it with a recurve. And in that situation, my son and him were moving in on the bugles, and I was staying back, keeping the bull bugling. This bull would be really, really rough country. And they finally got up on him. And my son was relating back to me, and he said, "We're about 70, 80 yards from the bull. We can hear him answering you." The bull did not even know those two were there. So, you know, I call it call and stalk. And a lot of times you'll get a bull just respond big time. And as long as you stay back 400 or 500 yards, he won't move. He'll stay right there and answer you. So I shoved them up. It was real early in the season. It was only like the 5th or so of September. And so I said, "You guys if we push him, there's a good chance he's wanting to move. It's real early." And so they're not really that fired up, but enough to answer back in a comfortable, communicative way. No challenging, nothing. And so anyway, they got within the 70, 80 yard, and so they're slipping in. And once they got to about, I would say, 40 yards or so, all of a sudden a cow busted them. They didn't even know she was there. And then a second one. And my son ran at him maybe 5 yards and pushed Clayton up front. He said, "Just get right to that tree." I mean, it was just a short distance. And my son at the same time just ripped the bugle off. And when he did, because he never saw the bull, just the cows. And when he did, that bull just screamed back, and my son cut him off, and the bull come running in, just, I mean, on fire. And as he did, Clayton tried to draw. Clayton had never killed the bull before. And as he tried to draw, he was just like, oh, my God. I mean, it's a really nice bull. For an over-the-counter, it ended up being 321. And as that bull's coming in, he sees Clayton, and so Clayton, the bull turns and to run away, he sees him kneeling, but he's not sure what he sees, but he knows it wasn't another elk. And as soon as he does, Paul hits him with a nervous grunt. It just gives him the real fast, and the bull stops and turns one last second just to identify what maybe he met, maybe what he saw. He doesn't know. You can get him to second guess himself. And when he did, he stopped and turned broadside real quick to look. And Clayton put that arrow right into him and killed him. And so, you know, a lot of times you get in these weird situations where things like that happen. And yeah, it's 60 and 100, but you never know if you can, you know, make something happen out of nothing, or if it is ready to back out. Of course, we weren't that far from the bull, but sometimes, you know, you learn from those things, and you know what you can get away with and what you can't, and you might be able to apply something like that in the future, no matter what the distance is, and try to create something, you know.
Right, right. No, that's... I've actually... Your... I think, like, second or third person I heard. I've never tried that with elk, like a whole running at them thing, but I learned that with deer years ago, that if I busted like a small buck, mm-hmm. or something, if I hit my rattling horns right after I busted him, mm-hmm. and there was the buck that I was going after saw that happen, that buck would come in because he thought that little buck just ran off because he just kicked his ass. Yeah. Yeah, so like it's very similar. That's cool. That's I've heard other people say it. Matter of fact, I'm trying to think what it was I had on the podcast was saying it. Anyway, it'll come to me, of course.
Are you saying they ran at him?
Anyhow. Yeah, that they ran at him. Like ran out of cover, and that they ran at, mm-hmm. the cows and then ripped off the bugle.
Yeah, we've done that, you know, a couple times in the last 30 years or so. And it can work, you know, and it can also go, you know, haywire. But I'll tell you something, I can't even think of one that went haywire. Yeah. I really can. And the several times I've done it, I never noticed a cow bark. No, nothing. They just run. And you know when they're not barking,
right.
The bull doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know why they're running. He has no idea. So when I inject that bull sound, and in my case, sometimes I'll use the Roundup. There are times I'll use a challenge bugle over it. But the only time I ever use a challenge bugle is when I have a bull that's been bugling like crazy already. Then I feel comfortable with it. But when I got a bull that's barely even saying anything, I just try to call his cows away from him if I get caught in that predicament. Now I'm just trying to call him. I'm not trying to challenge and threaten him because he's not that fired up. To me, that's when you lose those bulls because you pushed it too much the other direction. When you use a Roundup and you try to call the cows, you still have room to throw a challenge. You still have something in the bank in case he answers back. What if he doesn't answer back? And the cows are all running toward him. You know what I've done? When he doesn't do it, I start cow calling. And run at him. He thinks I'm one of the... I mean, those cows are talking like crazy when they're running. He just thinks I'm another one of them. And he'll let me run right to him as long as I got the cover and the wind. So, you know, I'm thinking constantly, evaluating every little thing that's happening because of prior mistakes over the years. You know, we've all made them. But these days, man, I try to minimize those mistakes. And I try to capitalize on anything but throwing in that white proverbial towel. I am trying to make every little thing work. If this goes away, or this goes away, or that, I'm constantly thinking now of how I can overcome, you know, a bad situation and turn it into a positive one.
No, that's awesome. I mean, you only got X amount of time in the field.
That's right.
Capitalize on everything you possibly
can. Especially on those over-the-counter hunts, because that's what we hunt. You know, 99.9% we're hunting over-the-counter elk. And so, you know, they see a lot of stuff. And we're not hunting dumb elk. In other words, I always say dumb elk is, you know, elk that very few people ever hunt. I mean, you get good tags or you're way deep and you get out there and make a few elk sounds. And I'm telling you, John, dumb elk are so easy. I mean, they just don't care. They come into anything. But then you get pressured elk and it's just a whole different ball game. It makes you learn the trade. If you don't want to learn the trade and you don't want to put the time in, man, don't even think of hunting over the counter on a regular basis, because you're not going to do very good. You have to know your craft, and carrying that over, you can make it work anywhere. It doesn't matter where you go hunting. You know, you can find success doing it. Right. And you have, so when that happens, you notice that you have a very confident attitude no matter what. Every time I go out, I know I can kill an elk. There is no doubt in my mind. If I went out, I don't care what day it is. If I went out today, I really feel I can call an elk in, because they talk year round. I know what they're going to play on right now. Very little bugling. I'm going to play on sounds that would require assistance or aid from other elk. That would be my strategy. You see, and that's the kind of sounds they're using more right now in July, almost August, than they would even consider in September, October. So just understanding the animal you're dealing with, it makes a big difference. You know, it's getting to the point where they're going to rub all their velvet off and a lot of rattling. They start sparring like crazy. And, you know, it's things like that that attract other elk. And, you know, I think of all these little things when I'm out there. I'm not that, just a couple bugles and a cow call guy. I mean, I use a lot of emotional sounds, and I like using my voice a lot. Probably 50% of my calling, John, is I'm using my voice. I'm not just using my bugle and my reed.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, take some time to
well,
practice
it's,
that.
Well, sure. You can do a lot of little things that just sound so real, and they have a lower tone. And so, you know, when I'm doing things like that, I'm usually, I know that I'm within hearing distance of elk. And so when I'm starting using a voice, I don't use my voice as a locator. I'm using it when I'm dealing with elk that have seen it and heard it all. And so you really have to remove the suspicion from them that you could be an imposter. And I've noticed by using my voice and my tone, and I'll still use my bugle and my reed, don't get me wrong, but I still like using just, you know, it depends on the sequence, and I always have a sequence that I'm going to use. I'm going to use something. There is none of this one little sound. You know, I'm going to do something that's going to draw them my way. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have so much success, is that in most cases, I make the elk come to me. I make them do the moving. Instead of me moving in their living room or in their dining room or whatever, they catch every little thing. And so, you know, at the same time, I just told you how I go at them sometimes. There are those occasions, but believe me, those things are in the 5% realm. 95% of the time, I make the elk come to me. And it gives me the advantage.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, anytime you can get them to come to you, you're the one. They're the ones that's moving. They're the ones that are making the noise. You know, so it's more likely to go your way.
It is, you know, sure. and especially if you have the confidence. But the only way you can build that confidence is through practice, practice, practice. It's like when you said earlier, you said that a guy can go, you know, with his gut feeling. And me, when a guy goes with his gut, it has to be upon past experiences for the situation or the animal you're hunting. If a baseball player is going with his gut, or a golfer, it's because of all the experience they've had, and they know sometimes they have to have just that touch for a particular shot. Or a ball player may go, man, this pitcher's good, but I've faced this guy 15 times now. My gut feeling is on this 3-2 count, he loves that curveball to fool me when it should be a fastball. You see, your gut now is from experience, right? Because of, you know, past repeated sessions with that pitcher. So as a hunter, I'm going with my gut, all right, but I'm going with my gut of a lot of trial and errors, or I've seen, you know, things are repetitive out there. And so the odds are with me that I need to choose this or this. And that's what I mean when I say I'm going by my gut.
Yeah. So this next question, I don't know. That's not really. I don't know. It's not really
well, you formulated that.
Let's say it says, well, let me read it. It says, what's the best method of following bull? Oh, excuse me. I keep bumping my head on the following bulls into their bedding area if the wind is not ideal. I mean, to me, that automatically, I say, well, don't do it. If the wind's
well,
not
you know,
ideal, don't go
it,
in there.
It says, what's the best? Know. It just says if it's not ideal. It doesn't say that it's bad. In other words, I get the little bit of an idea that if a bull drops into a bowl with a bunch of cows, now you have the wind coming down in almost every direction, you know. Are you going to wait them out and wait for the thermals to change and the wind will come up? But, you know, the best method of following the bull would be if the bull was vocal the entire way to the bedding area. Now, that's the easiest way to do it because, again, we're not talking sagebrush because you're going to see them. I mean, you can watch them. You can glass them. But this question to me would be the reason an individual would have difficulty is because he's hunting cover. And if the bull isn't talking, how does he know which direction he's going or where he's taking these cows? So he knows that he's going to be near the bedding area. The hunter would have no idea. So for me, I want to hear the bull be vocal as he leaves and continues to be vocal all the way. And they do it all the time. This is not unusual. And then there's a lot of times they don't. But for the best method, have a vocal bull. Because once that bull gets to the bedding area, even if it's not good right then, that means I'll probably try to get over there tomorrow a whole lot earlier. Maybe I caught him at 9:30, 10, 1 o'clock when the thermals are everywhere. But if I could have caught him an hour, hour and a half earlier over there, I could have probably had the wind in my favor, you know, for a short time. And when I mean a short time, I hunt elk in a lot of different areas. And I'm looking at, as the sun comes out, I'm looking at the area I'm in. There's times I look at it and I go, man, I've got like 10 minutes to kill this bull. In 10 minutes, everything's going to change. I can see it already. I can see the way the sun's coming over the tops or whatever the case may be. I see that. And so I put that time limit on myself. I've got 10 minutes to kill him or I have 20 minutes, whatever. So I may have to, you know, really pick it up what I'm going to do to create something to make it happen. And I'm that guy. I am not that guy to babysit elk, John. And I won't do it and I'll never do it. I'm not going to sit there and hunt a bull for 3 days. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to kill that bull or the shooter's going to kill him or we just back out and leave. I mean, I don't like messing around. I'm going to pull him over one way or another. And that's you know, that's our style. And look how many elk we kill every year. I mean, we kill a ton. I'm a very aggressive hunter. I'm a very aggressive, but I'm not reckless. I'm very strategic in what I have to work with. I will take what I have to work with and then try to give myself the best odds to make it work. Yeah, I've backed out before because I don't want elk winding me if I can at all help. I don't mind losing an encounter where a bull didn't come in because of the calling situation. That never buggers them. They're still right there. But if they see you or wind you, now they'll move out of that area.
Right.
But, you know, just because it didn't work out through calling, so many people think, oh, they just run off now. No, they don't. Why would they? They just think you were another bull. That's all. And then you lost interest in the way you went. So from that standpoint, it's not that big a deal.
Right. Yeah. No, for sure. The next question is actually a good question. I like this one. What time do you usually start calling in the morning to locate bulls? And are you like driving roads at night or anything like that? You know, doing location bugles.
Heck, I invented that. What do you mean? I've been talking about that for 20-something years. I'm sure other people have done it too. But I mean, yeah. When do I start calling in the morning, man, right out of the rig? I mean, oh, heck yeah. I'm not bashful about calling whatsoever because I usually get there early, but I'll test the waters. I'll throw out a bugle or two. And if I'm going to hunt like 2 days in a row and run and gun, because that's what I'm going to do, I'm not going to sit trails and water just because I don't want to. You know, it's a way to hunt elk, no question, but that's just not my style. So I'm constantly running and gunning. I'm on the move bugling, on the move bugling, on the move bugling, kind of like we talked last time. But after a couple of days, if things are so slow that I'm really not finding any sign at all, I mean, they're just not there, and nothing's responding even at distances, then I'll usually start an hour or so before daylight. and I'll have my pack completely ready, and I'll drive the roads, and about every 1 mile I will stop. As long as there's no camps around, I will stop and bugle. And I usually will bugle two or three times in about a minute. Wait 2 minutes. If nothing, I move up that next mile and I repeat. And I'll keep doing it until I finally find a bull. And I find one almost every single time. I mean, I can't even remember the last time I did this and didn't find a bull. Yeah. So, and most of them are quite a distance away. They're not near the road. But it's giving me a direction. Now I just stop, pull over. I don't care where I'm at. I just take that rig and jam it up into the brush or trees. I just get it off the road. And you can bet there ain't no dirt road or trail sitting next to it. And I grab my pack, shoulder it, and away I go. I go right toward that bugle. And so I'm going to do things of that nature. Yep. And it's so cool to do things like that, because so many times you get up there and you see why those elk were there. Because see, when you catch them that early in the morning, they're in their feeding area. And so, yeah, you get up there and you can see why they were there, why they're in that feeding area. And if they're still vocalizing on your way up, and I don't call anymore on my way up, nothing, zero. I'm going in the direction, and I'm hoping that they are talking somewhat, and it'll still give me, you know, a better direction so I don't get too close. But I try to stay at least 300 yards away until daylight. And then I make my move. And I'm reading the situation. I'm reading what kind of talking I'm hearing. Maybe I'm hearing no talking. So, you know, you don't know what your game plan is until you're in that actual situation.
Yeah. That's actually, I mean, I call that Arizona style. Only
cause,
I've been doing that for years and years and years. It's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
Especially when the bulls are not talking a lot, really hot days or whatever, you know they're going to be talking at night. So, or in the cover of dark anyway. Interesting story. So, like, and I think I feel like I told you this story before, but in Colorado, we were, my cousin Anthony and I were there with a couple friends of ours, and the bulls, nothing was talking. And man, we were putting miles and miles and miles on our boots, and we just cannot catch up with elk anywhere. And finally, I said, you know, it's screw shit. I said, Ant, we're going to do this Arizona style. So we got up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I, you know, I started driving, and, you know, I do basically the same thing as you, go like a mile, three quarters of a mile, whatever, stop the car, wait about five, you know, two to 5 minutes, and then rip out a bugle, and then, you know, wait for a response, and, you know, again, rip out a bugle. And then we finally, those 2 days that we did, it was the last 2 days we hung, we were getting on elk. And that morning, the last morning, we got a pretty fairly close bugle. I'd say, you know, under 600 yards from us. And I went in after this bull, and I was like, all right, we're going to hang out at like 100, we're going to hang out at like 200 yards or whatever. And this bull kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. I didn't say anything, you know, at this point anymore. I wasn't saying anything. Kept coming. And right at, like, just light enough for me to see and see with the bow, you know, see my pins on the bow, I had this pretty good 5x5 bull at 15 yards, just screaming, bugling right in our direction, you know? I could almost, like, feel his breath. And unfortunately, the cameraman, because I was filming for my TV show at the time, couldn't see him in the camera, and he's like, I'm like, you got him? He's like, no. Shit, I could totally kill this freaking bull right now. And anyway, so I let him go, thinking, you know, all I need is like another 7 to 10 minutes and it'll be light enough and the camera will be able to see. It'll be grainy, but it'll be able to see. I'll be able to call this bull back. And I'm never able to get that bull. He went down into the willows down by the by the river and disappeared into this.
He got suspicious real quick. He knew something wasn't right, and that happens. That's elk hunting, man.
yeah, for sure. So we just kind of touched on what this next question is. What's your go-to strategy when elk are not being vocal during?
Oh, for early. Season? Oh man, number one. Because it's a go-to strategy. It doesn't mean it's the only thing I ever do, but my go-to strategy And you have to remember, I'm only trying to target bulls. I don't care about cows and, you know, spikes and stuff. So my strategies are always, you know, designed to go after the bulls, whether it's a satellite or a herd bull. You know, it's hard to do that when they're not being vocal. You're out there trying to, you know, design something. You're trying to bring in horns.
Right.
And you can't dictate what that's going to be. But definitely one of the cats out of the bag is advertising bugling and rattling antlers. I mean, that's just, it just kicks their butt. You're talking about non-vocal times early on. We're talking about elk still getting their pecking order down, you know, and this is what they're doing. They just lost their velvet. They're starting to spar. They're getting to know each other. It's just like horses getting their pecking order down, and they'll push each other around. But when elk, early season especially, hear elk tangling and rattling, you know, pushing each other, and you're making some, this is really when I start doing a lot of my voice sounds. And when you're doing that, it just attracts attention. Mm-hmm. And they want to come over to look. They're not coming over for any other reason. They just want to see. You could go out there at that time, and you can cow call, and you can bugle, and use the two together all you want, and you're not going to get much action. You really won't. You're going to be better off sitting trails, escape routes, water sources, you know, tree standing. You're much better off to do that if you're not going to be a caller. And I consider rattling, raking, anything like that is calling elk. Anytime you make a sound mm-hmm. of anything that you're trying to get the attention of other elk to recognize you or your situation or position, you are calling to them. A lot of times guys go, oh, well, I don't call much, but I do a lot of raking. Well, that's what you're doing. That's part of calling. It's part of the whole thing. They don't get it. They think it's all bugling or something else, you know. But no, that's all part of the equation, that you're trying to fool them. You're trying to take them where they're at and bring them over to – where are you trying to bring them? John, 99% of the time, you are trying to bring an elk to where they have no intention of going. Nothing. They don't have no intention of going right where you're at. So
right.
You're trying to bring them over there for whatever reasons that you are giving them and trying to show interest. And so, you know, I try to make people understand that, you know, it's not like I'm sitting in their bed or something like that, you know, or right where they eat or where they're thinking of eating. No. Yeah, maybe you are at their water, but most of the times I'm a runner gunner, so I'm not looking for all that. I just like being in the vicinity of those things because I know they're usually within earshot of them, and I call tons of elk in that are near their bedding, near their feeding, near their watering, wallows. I'm not sitting those things, but I call a lot in those areas because they don't bed very far from them. And so, you know, but the thing is no matter what you're using to attract out elk, it's still considered calling elk. But that's what I would do early on. Oh, heck yeah. Unless something changed awesome. And they got real vocal. But a lot of times they're fairly quiet. But, man, go through some advertising and be creative in your calling up and down and changing the volume. And then just start rattling antlers, do it again, kicking the brush. I mean, you'd be shocked how many times elk will just show up. I mean, they just show up. They don't say anything. So you have to be, you know, on top of your game with your ears and your eyes because they just show up on the scene.
Paul, do you have your bugle tube on you?
Yeah, I have a bugle right here, John.
All right. Why don't you give us an example of the advertising bugle? Because you mentioned it a couple times now, and that what you would do with the early season.
Well, okay. Now, you know, I'll go through kind of a series of sounds. And again, all I'm doing is playing with the emotion of what this bull is feeling. Remember, he's advertising himself. So what he's doing is he's advertising himself into an area, and that's what a bull normally will do early season. He's not really trying to find a bunch of cows and this and that. I mean, he could be. But at the same time, everything is about letting anything elk-wise know out there that there's a new kid on the block. This guy is there. And so that's what you'll hear them doing, and so it's nothing predictable. And so when I'm given advertising bugles, I'm usually doing a little soft raking, thrashing around a little bit, nothing violent. And I, again, kicking my hooves around my feet, you know. And so here's kind of the sounds that I'm using. Oh. So you notice how kind of some of them are real whiny and wimpy, and some will be louder, and I throw a little chuckle in, and then I might do a little more. And I'll play with it up and down, and then maybe even just some short whines. I mean, I'll do this for like 15 minutes. I mean, I just keep going. No stopping.
No stopping at all. So just,
I just whine. And if when I start losing my breath, I'll go to lower, kind of a. And I mean, and I have watched bulls use this so many times, and that's why I picked it up years ago. And I, and a lot of times before I even get any kind of raking thing going or rattling, they're already showing up, because you see, this is more of a bull who's just feeling his oats. He's feeling, you know, frisky. He's feeling the the oncoming rut coming. And so I mean, that's what happens. And he just starts whining and moaning. He's just going all kinds of directions. He'll rake a little bit as he's feeling it. And a lot of times, if enough time goes by, that 10-15 minutes, I'll just start clicking the antlers. Then another bull came in, and you know, this is nothing violent. And all it does is just that creative situation like that pulls elk over your way. And that's what's so cool about it. If I spot bulls, oh man, I'm definitely going right to this, because they're still in their bachelor group, and this just sucks them right in. You don't have to go through a bunch of cow calling. You don't have to do anything like that. But you got to have a good setup, because if you let them stop out there, John, 80, 70, 80, 90, 100, 120, that's where they're going to stop. So you have to make sure you're in a very tight spot where they must come to your bow range, or whatever you're using, to your range before they can see that source of calling. Very, very important. But that's one of the things I do early season like that. I just kind of go through those motions. Very little to no cow calling, because I don't care about trying to pull a cow or a spike in.
Yeah, no, that's...
You got to try it, though. It kicks butt. Take those antlers out there and click and clack. And then you ramp it up when you think it sounds about right. And then you kind of tone them back down. And you just kind of give them those little voice kind of... You know, you just kind of play with it. And that's what I'll do. Kind of... And you just kind of play and give it with your bugle a little bit. That's just my voice. And you'd be surprised how real it sounds.
Yeah.
And I know it just kind of sells it to other elk that they just come bebopping your way. That's what they basically do. They come in like they have no care in the world. So hopefully that kind of answers that question.
So the next question I have for you is, when you're solo hunting, what have you found works best, especially like down timber and areas that are, you know, somewhat hard to get a shot off, to get a bull to come where you need them to make the shot?
Yeah, and again, it's all about setup. That's all it really is. It doesn't, nothing changes. Even when I'm tag teaming with my son and it's just the two of us, he's calling for me or I'm calling for him, I don't think a lot of people realize that probably 80% of the bulls we call in, either one of us could have shot them. They come in between us.
Okay.
So yeah, people think, oh, they're 50, 100 yards apart. No, and especially this question, I like it. It says because you're in down timber, so you're in some cover. But I do not change anything up from solo to tag teaming. And yes, I've taken plenty solo. But if I'm going to change anything, you know, if I would just kind of throw this in there, the only thing I really do is move up. So I'm playing, you know, I have to play the position of both shooter and caller. That's just right. All there. I have to play that role, just how it is. And so,
call, move up.
What's that?
Call first. You say you call first and then you move up, right?
When I know he's coming.
Right.
I don't do that until I know I'm reeling him in and he's coming. Say I'm going through a slow play. I've gotten him up. He's 175 yards away. Because that's, you know, that's usually really a good distance I'm using the slow play. And as he starts to inject his sound and participate, in my little arrangement, my little sequence, and I'm starting to get him to come. As he starts coming, he gets a little bit more excited. You can tell by his tone. And when that starts to happen, that's when I'll make some of my last sounds and move forward. What sounds are they? It depends on him. But most of the time, in most situations, it's the cow. I probably had down to the contact buzz where I'm asking him, demanding him to come over. And if he does hammer me right back with a real stern roundup, maybe some chuckles, he might even challenge, throw a challenge type of a sound out because he's getting frustrated that the cow's not coming. I may hit him real quick with the bugle, and that's when I move up. But then I'm not going to call from there. If I did,
right,
that means too much time went by, and I don't feel good about it. So I got to get him, you know, I got to get him back into the game. I can't let him think about it too much, too long, or it's over. And that's usually like a 1 minute, 1.5 minute. Man, I got to get back on him. And if that means I have to move up again, that's the way it is. He slowed down. He's not cooperating like I think he should. But these are more rare than the norm. Most of the time, once he commits, here he comes. So
right.
From that standpoint, you know, through a slow play or being aggressive, I may move. You know, and of course, there's always, I love having things next to me because I've had bulls come in and they're just not coming where I need them to. Yeah, you can cast your sound, do this and do that, but I like throwing things. I like throwing a rock, something big, something heavy. If he's coming the wrong way, and I'll throw it to try to redirect, because when he hears it, it's like an elk moving, and I'll try to get him to come over that direction, and that's what he'll usually do. He will start now. You know, you can throw sounds all you want, but I don't really want that. I want to make him hear a noise, and it's more natural to him. And so, yeah, there's times I'll move up like that, or I'll toss a heavy rock or a large short stick, something stubby like a baseball bat, to try to get him to hear it so that instead of him coming this way, I want him to come this way. So I'm just trying to direct him. That's really basically is all I'm trying to do. But in most situations, you don't have to go through all that. That one quick movement up, or if you're in a really good setup, he comes to the shooting, you know, he's coming in range anyway. People just aren't patient enough. They think that, you know, things are taking too long, and so they get a little, you know, too ambitious and move, and the next thing you know, you run into each other. But no, for the most part, I'm not doing much different other than maybe a short move or something like that. But other than that, I pretty much stay with the same system.
Yeah. I was just reading this next question. I sent it. I typed it out, but I didn't really read it. It's basically the same question. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you're doing once you have eyes on a bull to direct them to where your shooting lanes are? I don't know if that's...
No. I mean, you know, you have to be really careful once you get eyes on a bull. When I get eyes on a bull, and you know, I don't know if we're talking two people here or one person, but if let's just say it's solo. If I have eyes on the bull, you know, what distance are we talking? That makes a huge difference. I mean, if we're talking 50 yards and I have no shot, so I see him, great. I'm not calling. No, I'm not going to give. I'm not going to say anything to him. Let's put it this way: wherever he came from, I already got him to that spot. Is he going to turn around and leave, or is he going to keep coming? What are the odds? The odds are he's going to keep coming. He came over to that spot for a reason. You see, so I got him to that point, and this is where patience can pay off. Leave him alone. You already have him in search mode. That's how it comes. He's right there. If I can do something and make a sound where he can't see me, you know, and I can cast it or do anything that I think might bring him closer, then I probably would. But nothing out of the ordinary where it's going to mess something up. All I know is that when they get to a certain spot like that, most of the time they just keep coming. Yeah, they may stop and, you know, analyze the situation, scan, look around, and that right there, that's where people go wrong. Because all of a sudden they're thinking, oh, it's going to go away. Nothing's going to work. He's going to leave. And they want to get an arrow in him. I mean, they really do. They put so much pressure on themselves. But you need to calm down. Take that away from you. Make yourself think he's going to keep coming. He's going to keep coming. He's already came to there. Unless you give him a reason not to come any closer, there's no reason for him to turn around and leave. None. So, you know, it's things like that where guys put pressure on themselves. So once I got a bull right, you know, and I'm seeing him, yeah, it's very rare that I would ever call to him unless I was a caller and there was a shooter and I knew it just he was behind something or there were, you know, something right. was in the way. Now I might make a sound to try to draw him out. I might even nervous grunt him. That's one of my favorite sounds. And I've done it many, many times. I just hit him with the and they'll make that little step. They'll come out a little bit more because I'm asking them something. You see, I'm asking them for a visual or an identification. So a lot of times I won't give a cow sound just because it's too generic and it doesn't ask an action and the other does. It doesn't mean they won't move on a cow sound, but it's nothing like the nervous grunt. The nervous grunt just seems, it's the go-to sound that most of us use here.
Yeah. No, so I was hunting last year with Corey Ford and Shannon Mobbs for Roosevelt Elk mm-hmm. in Oregon, and they often would start off their calling sequence with a nervous grunt, and they would do a little nervous grunt, and then they would wait like 5 seconds, and then bugle. And Shannon basically explained it to me that. The way what he felt anyway was that when he did that, it got elk that were far off to pay attention. Like, hey, that's an elk over there. Was that an elk over there? And they're listening. And then he bugled, and he felt like he got more responses that when he did that. I wanted to know do you ever do anything like that where you start off with that before you go into your like a location bugle or a challenge or. Is that like a thing that you do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's nothing I haven't done. Yeah. I'm serious. I mean, I do everything. When it's like pulling teeth out there, you have to get creative. And given the nervous grunt and then a bugle, it's really a specific sound for elk. You'll hear a bull when he gets totally riled up. I mean, this guy is on full tilt. He is right there at 80 yards. You'll hear him hit that nervous grunt type of a single grunt and then scream right behind it. He's not giving right. two or three, he gives one. And I've called many a bulls in with that sound right when I got him to on the threshold, which this is going to be the ultimate right here. This to them, when you're close to a bull, it's almost like drawing a line in the sand and don't you dare cross it. That's what he's telling me and that's what I'm telling him. And so I like beating him at that game when I'm doing that. Do I use it as a locator? Yeah, I probably have, but I would probably be more, I'd be better off going to a lip ball as a locator. I do a lot of contact buzzes. I'll do it through the bugle sometimes, and a lot of times I don't. I'll do those as locators because you can get real loud with them, extremely loud. And right. see, and a lot of times other elk will answer that when the location bugle just isn't doing it. But in most cases, and I mean over 90% of the time, I have plenty of success with a location bugle. It's only those times when I think I'm looking down into a basin or some finger ridges way down and I'm on top and nothing's saying anything. And I'm like, I know there's elk there. So I'll get more right. creative. I'll really start trying to do other things to make them respond back. And especially if I hit the cow call real loud and just, obnoxious, really, and then just scream a lip ball over it. You know, you're trying to create something sometimes to get something to respond. You're not calling them to you. And I mean, they may be thinking a mile away or whatever, but I mean, you're just trying to get them to say something because if I know they're there, now I can get in there. And if I go all the way down there and they haven't said another thing, I know I'm going to slow play that bull. There is 100% that my decision has already been made. I know what I have to do to kill him.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. I mean,
but to use that every time. Given the grunt and I don't do it every time, but have I done? Oh heck yeah! You try different things over all the years you're out there, depending. But like I say, in most cases, you know that's how it is. I have a buddy. I'll give you his bugle. This is his bugle. He does it every time. He never changes, and he kills elk every year. He's part of the elk nut team. But here's how he starts his bugle, and I've hunted with him enough times, and he does this every single, and I don't bugle like this. I do it once in a blue moon, but this is his go-to sound. Here's what he does. He does that every time. Every single time. And you know, and I'm not that guy. I have done it, and I mean, I've been with him plenty of times when he's got his response, but I also will just do this and get a response. And that's what I do. And so, you know, that's in most cases, that's the bugle I'm going to use. I want it to ring it out. I want to be far reaching. But his doesn't sound anything like that. And as a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever even heard him make that kind of a bugle. But, you know, he does really good. And so, you know, a lot of times elk are going to answer just about anything if they're in that frame of mind, because not all elk out there are making the same sound. They're just not. And so you're just trying to get them to respond back. That's what you're really doing as an elk hunter. And once you get them to respond back, if you get one to respond back to when Clayton does that, that's his name, it's usually a fired up bull. I mean, you've got him already. His emotions much higher, and so you know what you're working with right there. Mine, it can go either way. I can have a bull fire off in a very aggressive manner, or he can give me the same sound back. And so I need to weigh that. I need to, okay, this bull's in this frame of mind, but this bull over here was in this frame of mind, and so I'm treating them different. And to me, that is when you start becoming a real elk hunter, a real elk caller, is you realizing that you have to switch it up for each type of bull. If you don't, I'm telling you, you lose bull after bull after bull after bull until you finally got one that connects. And it sucks, because you could go all day long and never find that bull.
Right. Oh, makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense.
Well, it works. Yeah. This is how we call them all in like this.
Well, that was the last question. I mean, I got one more question here, but this is what's your go-to read and diaphragm?
I mean, these days I've called elk in with everything imaginable, but what am I using this year? I actually changed this year. Okay. And I'm not using the elk nut chuckler, which I've used forever. I mean, long, long time. This year I'm actually using Phelps bugle.
Oh, nice.
And so I have the original one here, and I have the Renegade. I was supposed to get it today. It didn't show up today. Our app guy was going to be delivering it to me. But anyway, so I have the Renegade, which is by Phelps, and I'm using the Gray Amp. The Gray Amp and the Jason Phelps, the pink one, or salmon-colored, whatever that is. The Jason series one, Phelps series one. I really like those two. I used them all last year. And
yeah.
So I like kind the of gray and
I like the gray and I like the black one. And they're two extremes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, according to Phelps anyway, the black one is like a, you know, satellite bull or immature cow sounds, and the gray one is mature bull and mature, you know, so.
But you know,
two ends of the spectrum. And for some reason I like certain sounds out of this and certain sounds out of that.
But, you know, you can make a reed do anything though. You know, it's up to the user for his tongue pressure and air pressure. You can make any little dinky wimpy sound with the gray one, or you can get off the charts with it. And when I'm elk hunting, I only use one reed. I do not have a pocket full of reeds. I don't have one for this and one for this and for cows. No, I want one reed that does everything. And so every cow sound, every bull sound, no matter what I'm doing, I want that reed to be able to do it. If I'm giving a roundup bugle, I want that gray reed, you know, that gray reed to do it. The contact buzz, if I'm going and I'll hammer it with it, and if I want to go right into a bugle with it, kind of I like being able to do it with one, because I'm not that guy that wants to switch everything up all the time. you know, sometimes you got to get real low, real silent, you know, real quiet. And I'll do that with that reed too, whether it's a cow sound or a bull sound. But I want to be able to do it all with that. And then, like you like the gray one, if individuals out there are looking for a reed, and you know, and I'll say this right on the air, this is the best reed I've ever used. I've used everything of Rockies. I've used a ton of others, and I have not found anything that's as good as that gray amp. And that's a serious, and I, you know, I mean, we're all using it this year. This gray amp is absolutely phenomenal. It breaks over well. It seems to hold up good, even though when I go elk hunting this year, I will probably use at least 4 or 5 of these reeds during the month of September. I'll wear them out. And so I call a lot. I'm constantly calling. And when I'm working a herd bull, man, I take this thing is to the max. I am not that guy out there that's pussyfooting around and dinking, blah, blah, blah. No. When I'm out there, I mean, I mean business. I'm going to kill an elk. I'm going to make the guy out in front of me kill his bull. I'm going to make sure everybody, you know, has their opportunities. And so it's not difficult when the right situation arises that I'm going to really, you know, be aggressive on my reed. And I do. I get real aggressive where I can wear one out. And I mean, if I got into several bulls in 2 days, that reed would be gone. It's trashed. And so I have to pull another. Oh, yeah. There's none of this weeks and stuff with us for reeds. So one of these days we got to hunt together and you'll see how I'm doing it, why it'll be the reed up. But I'm very careful. So don't think I'm reckless out there just throwing these sounds out there. That's not what it is. But when it
not really,
it's when it calls for it though. You can't shrink back. You got to be right there. You know, I mean, tit for tat. If you don't, you're going to lose those bulls. You really will, and then you'll blame it on everything but yourself. But, yeah, that gray amp is really good. Guys, seriously consider that. And I really like this Phelps Bugle. Everybody knows I've used the Elk Neck Chucklers forever and done well. But I thought, you know, this time I'm going to try the Phelps when it seems to be real popular. And I actually do like the sound that I'm getting out of it. So, heck, I'll use anything.
I'm using the
Phelps. I was going to ask you which bugle you're using.
Yeah, so well the bugle that I'm using now, well I started last year, is I'm using Rockies.
Okay. It's a good bugle.
Yeah, actually Corey sent it to me. Mm-hmm. And it's all matchy matchy to my Sitka camo, which is kind of cool.
But, you're not one of those guys, are you?
I know that it's so funny. I never used to be. And then I figured out something. I was just
I'm
talking
just teasing
about this.
You.
this is actually a good tidbit. I found that when I am all matchy matchy and I'm wearing like, I feel like I'm putting on a suit of armor. I feel better about myself and I perform better. It's the craziest thing.
That's whatever your confidence, whatever it takes. Me, I can wear different pants, different shirt, different. My pack is brown. I don't even care.
I literally up until what I think 2016. Now I've been with Sitka since 2016. So up until 2016, I would be wearing. I mean, Walmart pants with. I mean, it didn't matter. And I mean, did I have? Of course, I had success, but. It
gives you confidence, man. That's good. I mean, stick with it. You know, nobody should be telling you what you need to do and not do. You know what works for you, and hey, I'd stay with it too.
Yeah. One thing I noticed about that I really liked it. I mentioned that black amps, that black Phelps reed, is that when it's windier or you need the sound to carry. Because it's so high pitched, it gets out there.
That's weird. Because I can't do it with that one. I thought it didn't have enough backbone for me. It's too soft.
Here, I'll rip a.
Yeah.
I'll rip. Let me go real quick, and you can see it. See if it sounds different to you.
Okay.
Sorry, I took my headphones off.
No, that's all right. When you is that your normal locator?
No, that's more like a lip
Yeah,
ball.
because it was a lip ball. I didn't know. Maybe that's what you use for a locator. I was curious if you did. Your locator will reach out further and carry more, though, generally.
Well, I like that when it's windy for
Yeah,
some
that's a
reason.
good
Like,
you that was a real good sound, though. That was really good.
thank you. I've been
I'd have you
practicing
call
your
for
app.
me any day.
I've
As long as it
been
required that
practicing.
sound.
I got some of the other ones
Oh,
down
I
for
bet
you
you
too.
do.
And
Oh, yeah.
you know, the only thing I liked about the black one is that when you need to do like closed mouth cow calling, when you want to be soft and like you don't have your mouth open so it doesn't carry real far, it's for me, I feel like it's way easier to do. It's a single
That's why he
reed.
makes all the different reeds, because we're all different. Now, can you do like a roundup bugle with it? In other words, if a bull's calling you to him, he'll give a roundup bugle, and he can show different tones of emotion depending on how long he's been trying to call you. Or maybe you got busted by a bull, and all of a sudden he's trying to round up his cows and get them out of there. So see, he shows more emotion. In that tone, he wants to gather them together and get them out. So, can you do like a roundup bugle with that? If you, I mean, do you know how what a roundup bugle sounds like?
Yes, I did. But, oh, sorry. Just realized that I lowered the volume. Yeah,
Okay.
I know what it sounds like. I don't know if I've never. I don't think I've tried
It's
it with
kind of
one.
a and then lip ball at the end, real quick. A bull does it really fast. When he does it, because he means business.
Let me see if I could do it with this. I'm gonna take my headphones off. Give me a second.
I was wondering if that how that black one did with it. That's what I was curious of.
Whoops. How'd that sound?
Yeah, it sounded. I mean, it was intense.
Oh,
I didn't hear the lip ball end on it, but sometimes a younger bull won't do that. Bulls will use a lot of different sounds, what they would consider a roundup. It depends on how much emotion that they're throwing out there. There's bulls when you're cow calling, they're gonna go, and that's what he'll do, and that's his first thing. But as it goes on and on, because you're still trying to call him to you, and he's not, and you're not going to him as he wants you to, he'll show more aggression, more aggression behind it. But normally, when you have like a, when he's going to throw that lip ball, he's going to be more, a little bit more like this. And he'll just kind of hit that right there. But that's when he's trying to mean business. He can lengthen and he can shorten that, but he usually will have that little threesome, that little growl, that little pitch, and then that little bit of a lip ball at the end. He doesn't give a monster lip ball. It's a mild lip ball. And because a lip ball can have, different meanings as well, but a lip ball can be used right during a challenge. All it is a sign of emotion from the bull. It's not meaning this sound only calls cows or whatever. Heck no, they use it against a bull too. It's just a part of the emotion or another sound or tone that they'll use. But I was just curious if the black one would do that tone in there, and it does sound like it would. I'll have to play with it. I have some of those coming too. Maybe he made them stiffer. I don't know. I also got some of those Mavericks. So last year when I used the Maverick, I didn't feel like they had much spine to them. I thought they were a little weak, but maybe it was just me. So I want to give them another try this year too.
I haven't tried that one. I tried
The what
the
one?
not the, the was it green one, I
Okay.
think it was.
I haven't done that one.
I
I need
got
that one.
I just ordered a couple more because I wanted to play around with them. I have my go-to one used to be the
It's a
orange.
good one.
Yeah, and that one, I mean, the orange one says immature bull calf,
Oh, you're not
but
talking about
for
the
some
pink one
reason,
then, the Phelps series.
no,
Oh, I thought that's the one you
no, no,
meant.
no.
No, that one is it's stiff.
Yeah, I used
Oh,
the
okay.
orange one,
I'm confusing those is all,
and
yeah.
then I went to the black, and then I found that I like the gray one a lot because it's I don't know, I feel like you could get a little more throaty with it, like you could get more depth, so to speak, out of it. But
you can call elk with anything. For certain, you know stuff. That.
Yeah, but you know what? I know sometimes you know you're always listening to all these guys winning freaking championships and shit, and you're always trying to. I mean, I before I even knew what the hell I was doing, I was calling freaking elk in with stupid sounds. You know, I remember not even having a bugle tube and cupping my hands together and making bugles, and I called in a bull. You know,
I've done it too. Yeah, come with my hands. Oh yeah, but I like the bugle. I just like the magnification and the variety, the mixed variety that you can do with it. But yeah, I've actually done the same thing with my hands and called bulls right in. And but that's not as fun. I gotta have the bugle.
No, it's not. Awesome. Well, I think we shared a lot of information.
No, you didn't. That was twofold there.
I just yes. But no, that's. I think we're gonna call it quits, and we'll leave something for the next one. I want to get you on after the season and talk about some stories from what you guys do this with you know, this year, and I'll be done with elk hunts by then as well. Because I'm only hunting Oregon for myself this year. I'm gonna go with Shannon and those guys, and then. I have one of my guides who drew a tag here in Arizona, so I'll help him out. And other than that, as far as rut hunts are concerned, that's it. I have a couple of late season rifle hunters, but that's.
I've had several guys call me wanting to know if I would call for him in Arizona, and another guy drew the Wanaha tag. Is that how you say it there in Washington? And I wish I had time to go do all those.
All right, buddy. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. We'll
Talk later. Sounds good. Sure. Thanks, John.
All right. Thanks. Bye.